This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 300 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Well, Max, did you think that we'd ever get this far?
No, seriously not. Oh, dear. When we started this, David, we barely knew much about what was happening in this unmanned aircraft space. And I think a lot has happened in the intervening years.
Yeah, it's funny because we've always said we didn't know what we didn't know. And we've talked about a lot of things that I don't think that we ever expected to talk about, like flying taxis and urban mobility and, you know, drone delivery and all of that stuff, you know, and all of that stuff has changed over time, and we've been invited by the FAA to attend conferences. We've had various people on from various professions. Somewhere along the line, we started to be regarded as experts. So, yeah. But Max,
I guess we fooled them, huh?
So,
I'm just kidding.
Well, we're not necessarily experts, but we're willing to do the research. You know, you've always said we do this so we learn, you know, and I've always said that's one of those things that keeps me mentally active is having to do all the research and reading and such. It makes for a better show. So, Max, I think you have a surprise for us.
That's right. We went back into the archives way back to episode 1 in order to take a look at what was the first story that we covered in episode 1 of the UAV Digest. And here it is. All right, the first story comes from Breaking Defense. This is titled, "Don't Say Drones, Beg Drone Makers." They mentioned that to the public, the word drone has a bad connotation. It means military and death to a lot of folks. Of course, we're inundated with stories in the news about drone strikes, and so that has a kind of a bad connotation to it. David, do you think the industry can change the word and change the perception?
I don't know. I mean, it is pretty, the article does cite one of my biggest pet peeves that no matter what UAV you're talking about, you end up getting a predator as the photograph at the top of the article. And actually, one of the things they said in the article was that when they show someone or ask them what they picture is a drone, they actually come out with a predator because it's been so ingrained by the mass media that is a drone. And it's tough. The article goes on to say that while everyone was trying not to use the words, there was a lot of people that inadvertently used the word. So it's sort of like, we're going to try not to use the D word because it just, in my opinion, the word drone should only be used for large United States Air Force fighters that have been converted to be shot down by missiles. That's always been my image of a drone.
That's kind of the original definition of a drone, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and unfortunately, drone is a term has been used since the doodlebug or from day one. So it's a mindless aircraft, meaning that no pilot. But really, in the modern day technology, we probably should keep the word drone for the bees.
Yes. And the thing that was kind of interesting to me was in the article, they point out the degree to which they're trying to kind of, you know, change the use of that word by the press, in that the Wi-Fi system at the conference had the password "Don't Say Drones." So when the press was logging into to Wi-Fi, That's what they had to type in as the password. So, I mean, that's a clever idea. It, I think, definitely would get this concept in front of the press, but whether or not they actually start using different terminology is kind of hard to say. I mean, what are they going to say? UAVs or UASs or RPAs or, you know, all those different definitions, different terms for the kind of the same thing.
Well, that didn't last too long, did it, David, before we all of us got sucked into calling them drones? Yeah, and it is funny because that was the AUVSI conference. But yes, we use the word drones now, but let's face it, we've come a long way. If you see the word drone now, or UAS or UAV, it's a quadcopter, primarily a DJI Phantom. No longer is it Predators and Reapers firing Hellfires. We've come a long way too. We've learned a hell of a lot. But should we move on to episode 400 and start this episode?
Onward and upward. So what's the first current news story we have, David?
Well, this is from commercialdroneprofessional.com. Ironically, see the word drone in the middle of that?
Yes.
Commercial Drone Alliance calls for focus on large UAS in letter to new FAA administrator. So the Commercial Drone Alliance sent a letter to both the new U.S. Chief Technology Officer as well as the new FAA administrator.
And this letter notes that the FAA has historically been focused mostly on small UAS, which of course we all know is the case, but the alliance wants to see regulators focus on large UAS. They say that companies need guidance to develop large unmanned aircraft. And I guess it's kind of true. I think the FAA had to focus in on the volume, the small UAS, great numbers of those aircraft. And yeah, we haven't heard too much about regulations pertaining to large UAS.
Which is another thing in the 5 years we've been doing this, that there's been a transition and we really have moved from prosumer to consumer or professional. You know, this insistence on large scale drones is because people want to start doing things like drone delivery and large scale observations of pipelines, etc. So I can understand why, from a commercial standpoint, we've gone to needing this. You know, we're not necessarily needing the small UASs. We need heavier, larger aircraft, which were supposed to come immediately after the small aircraft, but we've sort of gotten bogged down in 5 years.
And the executive director of the Commercial Drone Alliance, of course, is Lisa Ellman. She's also a partner at Hogan Lovells. And she's quoted in this article saying the Commercial Drone Alliance looks forward to working with newly sworn in FAA administrator and the recently confirmed CTO to develop common sense and business friendly regulations for large UAS. So, I think the FAA has still got a lot of work to do with small UAS, but, you know, we're getting through it. And so hopefully this is the time to start to bring the large UAS into the FAA's field of vision, if you will.
Well, let's move on to our second story, which is, this is from C4ISNet, lessons for drone defense from a tennis ball.
That's funny just in and of itself.
Yes. Well, you know, we have seen animals take out drones. We have seen a roll of toilet paper at a soccer match take out a drone. But in this case, probably the greatest woman tennis player of all time was playing target practice with her serve.
The cartoonist Randall Monroe, he asked Serena Williams to try and see if she could take out a quadcopter with a tennis ball. And apparently she said, okay. And we have a video here in this article where Serena's husband was flying a DJI Mavic Pro 2 over the net in a tennis court. And Serena, it took her three serves to actually hit the quadcopter with a tennis ball. But on the third try, she did. And the result of that is, as expected, the thing kind of flies into pieces and onto the court.
A smash of a serve.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the drone was smashed. Okay, so what's the point? The point is consumer drones are not very hardened against impact. Military applications that use consumer drones are vulnerable. And it also shows that should a prosumer drone like a Mavic Pro hit an aircraft or a larger object, I don't think the larger object is going to be very much fazed by something like that, unless something spectacular happens, like it gets ingested into an engine.
And there's a really fun kind of quote in here. At least I think it's kind of fun in this article. It says, this means that the minimum viable product when it comes to military answers to off-the-shelf drones might be closer to an off-the-shelf tennis ball machine than a Patriot missile.
Well, it would be far more cost-effective.
It sure would.
Well, our next story features wildlife, which we've talked a lot about over the last couple of years. And it's part of the Drones for Good, but we've seen all sorts of wildlife and stuff and animals and plants we never even knew about. But this story comes from ZDNet.com. Little Ripper deploys croc spotting AI drones. And we talked 13 episodes. We talked about the Little Ripper drones in Australia being to spot sharks. Well, it looks like their portfolio has gotten larger.
They're using the same drone technology to spot crocodiles now in Queensland. And apparently the Queensland government asked if the company could spot crocodiles, and they've been employing the same technology they use for identifying and spotting sharks to identify crocodiles.
And this is AI, or artificial intelligence, something that we've talked a lot about over the years. And they have taught these drones now to learn the difference between a shark and a croc, which is kind of impressive. And, you know, and as we go further, there are going to be more and more sensitivities to being able to identify whatever the target is that they're looking for. You know, there's a big difference between a crocodile and a shark, but being identifying a croc is kind of impressive.
Yeah. What's next, David? Identifying specific individuals, you know, maybe, you know, the bank robber from this morning or something of that sort. I think maybe the sky's the limit. With these AI applications, I think what this is, it's machine learning, right? I mean, it's the software learning to identify a certain type of object, whether it's a shark or a crocodile or whatever. And boy, we're certainly seeing those applications everywhere in life these days, it seems. So why not drones as well?
Agreed. And since you went off on identifying things and people, would you believe Amazon's got a patent for that? This is from bizjournals.com. Amazon.com averages almost 200 patents a month. Once a month, I would say, we talk about Amazon patenting something, and my co-host has a disclaimer about that.
Oh, that's right. The standard disclaimer is that just because somebody patents something doesn't mean you will ever, ever see it. What companies do these days is anything they can dream up, they patent on the off chance that it will either be of value to them in the future or to someone else, in which case they have the ability then to license that idea. But this article describes two patents. One is launching unmanned aircraft from freight cars, and the other one is using one or more drones to locate you in areas where there's limited GPS access.
Now, back in the day, I had a model railroad, and my brother had a model railroad. And one of my brother's favorite cars, and it was mine too, was a boxcar that would fire a missile out of it. So this technology has been around for years. But Amazon wants to get as close as they can to you before they launch the drone. And they basically have freight cars, but they will be really automated fulfillment centers. Kind of like, you know, what's old is new again, rail postal cars. And how they used to have the bag hanging out at the train station. As the train went by, you scooped the bag up with the mail. So basically, these cars will open up and the drones will fly out with the packages and the train will keep going.
These containers will have a robot arm inside that can load the drones, load the packages onto the drones. They also say that this container could act as a repair station for damaged drones. And like you say, David, they would come and go through the roof. Amazon does note that their idea here that's subject to the patent isn't limited to just rail-based containers, that they could be on trucks or something else. But that's kind of the general idea. And David, I think you nailed it, though, when you said that part of the motivation, or a big part of the motivation for this is drones don't have great ranges, at least not the type of drones that would be used for package delivery. You really like short trips. And so putting the packages out closer to the final delivery point makes a lot of sense. So yeah, this is an idea that, you know, conceptually one way or another, I think makes some sense.
Yeah, and we have talked about some of the other people building trucks with launch pads, et cetera, for delivery. What's interesting about this is the trucks that we've talked about have had like two quadcopters. In this case, if it was a rail car, you'd have a lot of quadcopters. But once you launch the quadcopters, how do they find you?
And that's the subject of the second patent that's described here. And this is to be used in the case where the drone is having trouble finding you to make the delivery. So the idea here is that a single drone would fly to the general vicinity. If it can't find you, it could send a message to your phone requesting more precise location information. And if that doesn't work, then one or more drones could be sent in that would triangulate the location of the customer. So this is an idea that's addressing the issue of having difficulty finding the delivery point. And how do you handle that? And Amazon, in this concept anyway, is looking at multiple drones triangulating on the customer.
Yes, and we actually talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about drone delivery to the sports stadium, where you have an app and the drone locates you by the app. So it also is a way to make sure that you are getting your packages and not the people who are stealing packages off the front lawn. So again, Amazon is constantly trying to keep ahead of everybody else as far as drone delivery goes. And in 5 years, we've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go.
Now, the patent also mentions that Amazon may utilize facial recognition techniques and determine whether the photographic image of the customer matches the customer image provided to the delivery service. So we have that little additional twist. And, you know, there are a couple of other interesting stories this week on package delivery, David, that aren't in our lineup here. But I did notice that, just quickly, Bell Textron's eVTOL Autonomous Pod Transport, or ATP-70 cargo drone, completed its first autonomous test. That was in Texas near Fort Worth. And also, there was a successful test flight a few weeks ago by Elroy Air of a heavy lift drone. This drone weighs 1,215 pounds. It only reached a height of 10 feet, hovered for 64 seconds, and then landed. But again, it was the first a test flight of this heavy lift drone. They want to start delivering cargo with this thing by next year, 2020. So that's pretty aggressive. But that's just a little bit more of package delivery news from the week.
Max, David, Launchpad here. Congratulations on 300 episodes. Not a milestone to be taken lightly. Good job.
Our next story comes from the Olean Times Herald, and it is AirVironment donates 87 Quantex drones and ADV DSS ecosystems to 35 U.S. university agriculture departments to advance drones in farming. Ah, Max, we have to talk at least once a month about precision agriculture.
AirVironment has a project. They call it the Quantix and AVDSS University Collaboration Project, where AVDSS stands for AirVironment Decision Support System. And so these drones and the software system that goes with it are being provided to these universities for research and training purposes for the students.
So they're spreading it out and so that they can bring back the data to make a better equipment for and sensors for precision agriculture. Also, the goal is to get people more familiar with precision agriculture using UASs, you know. And so it's a way to grow the market and getting people comfortable with the technology.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that kind of all parties kind of benefit from this arrangement. The students at the schools learn the technology that they'll most likely be employing after they graduate. And yeah, AirVironment gets to gather a lot of real-world experience through the student use of these drones. It's a fixed-wing VTOL drone, and there's actually a video of this that we can put in the show notes. So if you go over to the UAVDigest.com, you'll see this Quantix drone little video.
Now, my co-host is sometimes so brilliant. The last two stories were about precision agriculture and facial recognition. We have our next story from CNET.com, drones on the farm, using facial recognition to keep cows healthy. So I like how you tied those two together, Max. So let's get moving on. How about this story?
This is about an automated drone system, again, to monitor the health of cattle in the pasture. It's difficult, especially beef cattle. It's hard to monitor them because they spend so much of the day out in the pasture grazing. They're hard to check on. So this is an automated system that's being developed by a team of professors and student researchers in the UK.
It's using a 3DR Solo drones modified with a Raspberry Pi, my co-host's second favorite thing next to fuel cells. But cows have specific facial recognitions, and you, having family that lived on farms, you got to know the animals and you got to know who was who. And this is just more machine learning and artificial intelligence to know who is what cattle. And the other part about it is to learn how you can tell if that cattle is healthy or not. So, you know, you can come back and report back that the bovine that we're looking at is Jim and the bull, and he's got a cold. I mean, which is nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of technology at one time.
Oh, man. The idea here is that an observer drone would hover above the herd, maybe 90 to 270 feet above the herd, they say, with a downward-facing stereo camera that would track motion. So that would determine the location and orientation of the cattle. And then three worker drones would come in, take that location information, and track a specific animal. And these worker drones would then perform the health monitoring tasks. So it's interesting. There's some synchronized flight going on here. And they've also and this is also important, I think, they've been testing to confirm that the drones, that this whole idea doesn't spook the cattle. Obviously, you could develop a great technological solution, but if the cattle were upset by the drone activity, then you know that would or that could negate the whole thing. So they've been looking at that as well.
And cattle get spooked easily.
They do,
and they're not very bright. So a lot of technology there, but one of the things that we've talked about a lot and was a big deal, say, 4 years ago, was the FAA test sites for UASs. One of the most significant ones is North Dakota. And the following two stories are from that test site and the FAA pilot program. Now, anybody who's listened to the show knows how much I hate that phrase.
Because there's no pilots.
Because there's no pilots. But the FAA pilot program, the first one is from executivebiz.com. The FAA authorized Airbus Aerial to operate UAS at the Grand Forks, North Dakota test site as part of the UAS integration pilot program. And they've been given a this is one of those things we've learned. I used to say BVLOS, and now we've learned to say it's BVLOS, or beyond visual line of sight. So they've been authorized to use their SenseFly EB drone to survey power lines in the North Dakota area beyond visual line of sight, which is very important when you're sending an aircraft several miles down for inspection. Now, how about the second one, Max?
Now, this is a waiver that was granted to General Atomics Aeronautical Systems. This is the COA, the Certificate of Waiver or Authorization, again for BVLOS. And what they are looking at here is the use of a ground-based sense-and-avoid system, or a GBSAA, a ground-based sense-and-avoid, something that's much less expensive than employing a chase aircraft in times like this. And what they're doing here is they're incorporating the Grand Forks Air Force Base Air Surveillance Radar and the L3 Harris Technologies View Station and Range View Systems. And then these together are going to, the idea is that they will meet the sense and avoid requirements over a large airspace. And the FAA has granted this authorization for 1 year, beginning on August 31st, which is right about now, pretty close. So again, as you say, David, the North Dakota test site is got some, you know, some serious activity going on that is really important when we think about integrating UAS into the national airspace system here, especially from a beyond visual line of sight perspective.
One of the things that we came up with over the years was videos of the week, you know, something that quirky or something that we've seen, or some of it has been downright gorgeous. Like I remember the Iceland footage. Waterfalls in Iceland. So our first story comes from abc.net.au. Video of a man fishing while dangling from a drone under investigation from CASA. Really? one of the other things that we've come up with is, you know, we have the You're Grounded file, and I think this falls into You're Grounded file.
This gentleman posted a video on social media. A lot of times these guys who do crazy things end up informing the world of their craziness this way. But what he's got is a large drone that's reportedly homemade. And it's got a chair, like a aluminum lawn chair, suspended from it. And in this video, he's suspended over the water by the drone. He's fishing, he's drinking beer, he catches a fish, and then he flies away. CASA is a little bit concerned about this, and like you say, they're investigating.
And our other video of the week was my attempt at being humorous. We've talked about all sorts of self-propelled automated vehicles. We've talked about unmanned submersibles. We've talked about unmanned aircraft. We've talked about unmanned vehicles. Well, this week on Mashable, how about a self-driving suitcase? Nothing like having an unmanned vehicle to propel your clothes.
It behaves like those selfie drones that stay overhead watching you. This suitcase follows you along. It's called the Orvis suitcase, and it's got a GPS location tracker, a smart alarm, an embedded weight sensor, and it follows with the owner. Meanwhile, the computer vision technology lets it see and avoid obstacles. So it's kind of solving some similar problems that we see in the unmanned space. But lest you think this is too improbable, it's TSA approved. It's got a digital lock. Of course, it needs power. It's got a LiPo battery. And as you know, you can't check luggage with LiPo batteries. So that's removable. When it's in the suitcase, anyway, it doubles as a charging station. So this comes from a company called Forward X Robotics. It's the subject, or it was the subject, of an Indiegogo project, I see, which is now closed. They got over $1 million in support for this project.
There's a lot of lazy travelers in the universe.
Besides, how cool would it be to have a suitcase following you around in the airport? It's not gone into production yet. They're still doing some pre-production development. But based on their timeline, it looks like they may be kind of close. I don't know, David. It seems like that might be a good target to be stolen by somebody in the airport, since they could just grab it and run off with it. But then, I don't know, maybe as soon as they let go of it, it would return to the owner.
Well, either that or an alarm would go off.
Yeah, yeah.
But having flown through Atlanta, Georgia, I wonder how effective it will be dodging all the people on a Friday afternoon who were trying to get home. But, you know, there are stranger things have happened. So I guess, Max, so we did this as a lark, sort of. I'm really proud of the fact that we've gotten 300 episodes of this. And I know I've learned a lot, and I know I've enjoyed doing this with you. It's really been a great run. There's only one person I miss when it comes to this. And she was a bit as big a part of our show as you or I, and that would be Drone Mama. And she's still with us, I know, but it just, I do miss her and all of the fun times we had about the stories and the editing and stuff like that. But thank you so much for all your hard work on the show. You do an amazing job editing and making me sound not like a complete idiot. I just want to say thank you. I'm looking forward to the next 300 episodes.
Well, and thank you as well, David. And yes, I think of Drone Mama every day. It's been difficult. It's been almost a year now, hard to believe. But yeah, she was a pretty strong behind the scenes part of the show. But it's been great, as you said, a terrific learning experience. That was kind of the big motivation for us, I think, to, as you said, was to sort of publicly learn about unmanned aircraft and what are the regulatory challenges, or what are the technology challenges, what are the possibilities for the industry, and what are the opportunities for careers in the unmanned aviation space. And so we have learned a lot in these 300 episodes. And you know what? I bet in the next 300 episodes, we'll learn just as much again, all of us together. So we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes for this episode at the UAVDigest.com/300. And we do have quite a few videos associated with the news stories we talked about. So you may want to check out the show notes and watch some of them.
And of course, we're all over social media. We're on Facebook, We are on Twitter at UAV Digest. And most of all, you can join the conversation and talk to Max and I through our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending a request to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we'll send you an invite and you can join this, our Slack listener team with all of everyone to talk there. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we want to say thank you for taking the time each week to listen to us drone on about UASs. So with that bad pun, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.